Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Born Offside. Where have you been? Where have we been? Where has anyone been? Today, from King Eric to Fucked Up Phil, Horseman Owen to Shearer the Shearer, we look at last weekend's Premier League action and look ahead to the international break. In the studio with me today, as always, we have trusted donkey Divock Dave Origi Hooker. Dave, how are we today?
Mate, I'm going to let the fact that you have called me Donkey Dave Divock, I'm going to let that go. I'm also going to look past the lies that you told in your three-line intro. One, we are not in a studio. We never have been and probably never will be
The
in a
virtual
studio.
studio. We'll just take it as that.
And two, let's face it, our deep analysis of last week's fixtures and or the upcoming ones is going to be waylaid by the approximately 35 minutes we're going to spend on Eric Cantona's speech.
Absolutely. It was for anyone who hasn't listened or doesn't know anything about what has happened. For goodness sake, you should have at least found out what happened here. It was at the Champions League draw last week. King Eric Cantona stepped up in his non-ironed pink shirt and grey cap to give us a true lesson in
Mate, and
well,
the beard.
not for what.
Mate,
The beard. What a beard.
I put it
Oh.
to you that Eric Cantona is the most rustic French person of all time. Like, for a long time it was Depardieu, and then you had the Roux brothers and like all of that, but like when you talk pure rustic French, you
Ah,
know,
look at
like
that.
crusty bread and boule, like come on, look at him. Like, you know, muscly but fat at the same time. You know, rotund and charming but fucking scruffy. I mean, I hated him as a player, mate. I'll tell you this now. I hated him. But now, as whatever it is that he is now, I love him. I adore him. I think he's wonderful. And
He's
this.
supposed to be an actor, and then he's not, and then he's I don't know, is he fishing? And then he's a pauper. I don't know what he's doing. I mean, the fact that he got asked to come in and do this speech in itself was a little bit of a mystery. But then for him to come out with this, I mean, they must have surely looked at what he was going to say beforehand. No, I
No,
mean,
no, no, mate.
no.
I put it to you. I'm putting a lot of things to you. But for me, the best part of the whole thing is the various people's faces as he's saying it. Your former school friend, Pedro Pinto, you can literally see him going, "This is going to go south. What do I do? When do I stop him? When do I say thank you and get off?" I would be the guy that told Eric Cantona to get off the stage. But if I don't stop him, he's going to continue. When shall I stop? Oh, thank God he stopped.
He's just stopped.
But then that's not even the best face of someone in the crowd. It's not even the best Portuguese face of someone in the crowd. Because Ronaldo's face, oh, mate, this
Well, he
is.
is Portuguese. Ronaldo's Portuguese.
Yeah, I'm saying that, like.
Oh, the best Portuguese, not the best Portuguese.
Yeah,
Yes, you're right. Sorry,
Pedro's
sorry.
was not even the best Portuguese reaction in the,
True, true.
because mate, I think this is the greatest thing Ronaldo has ever done. He nails absolute bemusement, like you wouldn't, like he sat there going, you could literally see him going, "What the actual fuck?"
What is he on?
And then
It's
my
just.
favorite bit about it is Messi is sat next to him, who clearly still knows zero English, and Messi's just smiling, going, "Camera's probably on me, I'll smile. I don't know what this is about. The atmosphere's gone a bit weird, but well, okay, whatever." Inane grin, inane grin. But Ronaldo gets English, and Ronaldo's listening to it and going, "Wow, just
What?
mate."
What?
I want to analyze it sentence by sentence. Right, you ready? So I'm going to read it
Oh,
out for
all right. Okay.
the benefit of people who haven't seen, heard, or read about it.
Let's do it. Let's
This
do it.
is Sir Eric. As he should be known, Lord Eric, whatever he is. What's a French sir? Anyway,
Other than Monsieur,
a monsieur,
Monsieur.
monsieur, a monsieur? Isn't that a
That'll
sandwich?
do.
Anyway, as flies to wanton boys, are we to the gods. They kill us for their sport. Soon the science will not only be able to slow down the aging of the cells, soon the science will fix the cells to the state, and so we will become eternal. Only accidents, crimes, wars will still kill us, but unfortunately, crimes, wars will multiply. I love football. Thank you. Wow. Mate, so first, he starts with King Lear, right? Mm. As flies to wanton boys, are we to the gods. So, all right, a little deep for a UEFA event, but still, fine. We'll go with it.
Let it go. Yep.
They kill us for their sport. Okay, so in this, who are the boys? What? The footballers in the room? Who are the gods? The fans? UEFA? UEFA are the gods? Have UEFA killed anybody recently? Quite probably, yes. But who is he getting at? Then we'll abandon our great general metaphor about the state of presumably football, perhaps the world, and we'll go into science. And then he says, like, this is soon the science will not be able to, not only be able to slow down the aging of the cells, soon the science will fix the cells to the state and we will become eternal. Like, does he know this? Is he speculating? Has he got some medical friends who've worked it out? And then like, and it's like, good news. Oh, cheers, Eric. Wonderful. Fantastic. Good news. We're all not going to die. Yes. Only accidents, crimes, and wars. Oh, good point, Eric. Temperate. Well yep. done. Okay. Yep. We shouldn't get too excited by the fact that none of us are going to die, but because you've still got crime, war, famine, etc. Okay, fair enough. Still, on the whole, good news. However, crimes, wars will multiply. Oh, for fuck's sake. Which one is it? Is this good news? Is it bad news? Is it we up or are we down? And then, out of nowhere, I love football. Like, what? What was this whole thing about? Why?
Has anyone else out there in the world attempted to dissect it? Or have they just gone, you know what? I just don't. I'm not going to even try. There's no point. Let's just move on to other things because it's just absolutely incoherent. It's just, I have no idea what it goes in there.
What's his point? What is he trying to say?
I think at the end of it all, the underlying fact is that crimes and wars will multiply. Mm-hmm. So we are all dead, regardless of whether the science will be able to slow down the aging of the cells. We will all die because crimes and wars will multiply.
What's he trying to do? Trying to tell doctors to stop it? Don't even bother? Look.
Yeah, the virus is just out there. You know, and it's going to go out there and it's going to kill us all. And there's nothing that anybody can do. However, he loves football. And that's what it really sort of counts at the end of the day, that he loves football.
What I'm taking from this is, scientists, stop it. People, yep. stop it. Stop your worrying. Stop your fighting. Stop your trying to live forever, bollocks. Just watch football. That's what I'm
just
taking
watch
from
football. That's it. There's no point fighting anymore. Just let go. Okay? Yeah. Just let go. Walk to the light. We've had this discussion before as well. Walk away from the light. Walk to the light. Walk to the light. The light is football. It's the only thing that can save you, or at least can
mankind.
Make you... Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe football is the answer. Maybe that's what he's trying to get to.
Mate, was he trying to get to that same point when he smashed an egg with his dick?
Right. Yes. Now I'm just going to make reference to that as well. In that it surely it has. Maybe this is a lead on. You know, maybe the cock slapping was the beginning of it all, and that was just
it's
a little
trilogy. What's
yeah,
next?
Yeah, no. Oh my God, what's next? Who can know? I don't think even bookies will put anything on it because
when you open your trilogy with the breaking of an egg with a massive cock, I don't think there's anywhere worse you can go. Like,
and then after doing that, they invite him to UEFA. To one of the biggest stages in football, in European football, he was receiving an award, wasn't he? Was he receiving an award?
Yeah, he was winning
Cock Slapper of the Year.
No, like he was winning like some kind of President's Achievement, like, you know, like a Lifetime Achievement type award.
Was it an ambassadorial thing? Was he like, is he going to be the ambassador for football? And he was getting like an award for that. Because if he's the ambassador for football, then I'm loving where this is going. You know?
Yes, please.
Give me more.
More of this, please.
It's hard to know where he will go next. But wherever he does go, it's obviously going to bring a lot of light to us and to our meeker lives, where we remain with the hope that the possibility that cells
will be fixed in the state.
Yeah. And scientists keep doing their job. Great stuff. Thanks, buddy. Well done, King Eric. I think if we had an award for Hero of the Week, it would just have to be King Eric, really, because he's just stolen the limelight from everything else. And all the bad that has happened in football over the week with multiple cases of racism, unfortunately, coming to a fore once again, of terrible footballing results to giants out there, and he's come in and shed light on it all, made us all feel a hell of a lot
perspective
better.
a lot of perspective.
Totally. Who needs VAR?
Do you think perhaps the egg is the world and the cock is the walls?
Are the wanton boys?
Yeah, you've gone too far. Okay. Sorry. No, the gods. The cock is the gods. It's the cock.
That's right.
The god cock is what it is, and it's slapped down the world.
And the egg is the altar boys?
No, the egg is the world. Stop trying to make this homoerotic.
Right, okay. Either way, well done, King Eric. And if you guys haven't seen it, it's well worth the minute. that he takes.
But I challenge you that you won't be able to watch it twice. I watched it once, loved it, was like, wow. But then when you often click the button to replay and watch it, I couldn't. I was just like, no. I don't think I can watch that again. Like, once
whereas
is
the
enough.
Cock slapping.
Yeah, you have to watch that several times to realize it's real.
Absolutely. This was just unbelievable. It was, there's a case for, it was a minute that we never got back from our lives ever again, but at the same time was, oh my God, how enlightening. I just feel like I want to go and have a steak for dinner now. It worked. Well done, King Eric. They continued the Champions League draw, of course, and we can talk a little bit more about that later on, I think. But thank you once again, King Eric. Good job. And mate, let's get on with this pod, shall we?
Should we talk about some actual football?
I think we probably should. Let's kick off with last week's, the Premier League from last week, because it really was, it was pulsating. An absolutely wonderful week of football, weekend of football, which of course is now replaced by the International Week, which has left us all in a little bit of...
Bimbo.
Absolutely. It's just horrible. Mate, we have to start with the North London Derby, mate. It was an incredible football match, at least for the neutral, I think it was. For fans of both Arsenal and Spurs, I think it was probably quite the nail biter. And, mate, you said it in the last pod that it almost felt like the Premier League hasn't started. Mate, how do you feel now? Has it started?
It started, and now why do we have the bloody international break?
It started,
mate. I tell you, this is my detailed analysis of the North London Derby.
Come on, then. Right?
Okay, so like around the 0 minute mark. All right, lads, come on. Okay, come on. Then for the first goal, it was like, oh, he's dropped it. Yes. Then the second one, oh
yep,
it's a pen. Is that a pen?
It's Granit Xhaka.
And then
doing what
then
he does best.
The thing is, he is so late. I mean, so late that not only do you, as the watcher, not realise that he's fouled, son, that the other Tottenham players don't even realise that he's fouled. Son. The only one who knows that Xhaka has fouled, son, is son. Mate, he's incredibly late. Like, it's spectacularly late.
And the ref doesn't blow for a little while as well. It's almost
like... because he waits for Ericsson to have a shot or not have a shot.
Right, that's it. He's looking to play advantage. And of course, once he's done that, like you said, I mean, it's out of the shot. Like, no one's even looking. Even Son doesn't really kind of complain too much until...
Son doesn't realise he's... Like, Son has got the ball, turned in a busy, crowded penalty area, played it to Ericsson. One, two, three. Oh, my legs have gone.
And that's it. And it's a penalty, a clear penalty, absolutely clear. I don't know what Granite was going on and trying to...
I've said it before and I'll say it again. What is the point of Granite Xhaka? I mean, really, what is the point?
No idea. I think it's and he's captain of Everton, of Arsenal as well, isn't he?
So of Everton too. Like, he might as well be captain of Everton.
As well, by the sounds of things. He got him a penalty. Well done. But mate, 2-0. Cruising towards half time, and then Lacazette just before half time lashes home. Nothing our good friend Lloris could have done about the goal. Slightly sloppy defending, but
that was that was a weird one to me, because in the build up to that goal,
and Sissoko should have cleared. I think
Sissoko should, but there's like before Sissoko should have cleared, Danny Rose handballs it.
That's right, yes.
And I've never seen it back, because obviously Lacazette scores from the resulting advantage. But you can kind of see the Tottenham defence thinking, that's going to be a penalty. Like, you can clearly see Danny Rose going, no, I didn't touch it. Oh, fuck VAR. Fuck. Like, and then the whole Tottenham defence is like, as soon as this ball goes out of play, that's a penalty. Yep. But we need to get it out of play for there to be halftime. What do we do?
panic stations.
And they panicked, and Lacazette scores and takes the decision away from VAR. So it was weird. I feel like there would have been a pen, because... I'd never seen it back, but it felt like Rose quite clearly touched it with his hand.
Well, with all the VAR stuff going on, and we I think on this show we've decided that we're just not going to talk about it, are we? We're just going to let it go, really, quite frankly. And although there have been some very contentious moments, including Aston Villa and their last minute goal, which was chalked off because...
Well, and that's not a VAR thing, though. That's just terrible refereeing. It has nothing to do with
that. No, that's right. But it just seems that was just a crazy one as well. I'll probably talk about that one a bit later. But you're right. Yeah, it should have been a penalty. It wasn't. But like I said, did score it. So half time, 2-1 up. Still, you know, very respectable. But you just felt that Arsenal with that goal, you know, had it all. You know, momentum had pretty much sort of swung back, hadn't they, really? And then Aubameyang comes along, nice equaliser. And then it's just ding-dong, and both teams could have lost it, really, couldn't they, in the end?
Yes. Kane hits the post. Socrates.
Socrates.
Has a goal disallowed for... and, mate, the other incredible thing, Xhaka got his first yellow card in the 91st minute.
It was like delayed reaction.
Like, no, I mean, when he gave him the second yellow card, I was like, oh, right, he's off. And I'm like, hang on, how is he not off? I mean, surely he's got a... What? Like, it was just unbelievable that he hadn't got sent off. It was a bit...
It was. Mate, did Harry Kane dive?
Yes, Harry Kane dived.
Yeah.
But...
Do we condone this?
Yes.
Do we say
I condone it. No, well, I don't. I don't condone it because he's dived badly, right?
Okay.
I also honestly don't really like this.
Buy a penalty thing.
No, I mean, I don't like this backlash of just because he's the England captain, no one's going to pay any attention to it. Yeah, everybody's fucking talking about it, so shut up.
Yeah, very true.
thing that goes on. I can give you a list of players, a long list: English, Welsh, Portuguese, continental, South American, who, like, it's not diving if you put your body in such a position that you invite or cause the defender to foul you. Right? And Kane was trying to do that, did a bad job of that, because because he didn't get himself in such a position that Socrates was forced to foul him, or that it was unequivocal that it was a foul. Also, Kane would have been better off shooting as well.
True, yeah. I mean, it seemed ridiculous. I mean, it was on his left peg, but still, you know, you're in a good position.
Pretty good
to
with his left peg. For me, it's a poor decision. Like, it's a poor footballing decision. It's poor execution. But this thing that's being thrown at him of, like, being a cheater or, there are so many players, like, of any kind of level of honesty, that see a man coming and knock the ball and get clattered. Are you telling me that every single one of them is buying a foul? Like, that's part of football. You take some risk, right? I mean,
okay. Had Granit Xhaka done it on the other end on the 91st minute and got the penalty for it, what would you be saying?
Then I would have struggled to believe it, because then you're asking me to believe that Granit Xhaka would have executed something well, which
okay, fair.
Which I doubt could possibly
just have doesn't happen. Like, absolutely.
And I don't also know why anyone's angry about it, because the ref didn't give it. Like, the ref has gone, you've attempted to win a penalty. You haven't really done it.
Did he book him for it?
No, because it's not a dive. He's getting himself between Socrates and the ball, but doesn't do it well enough, and Socrates gets the ball fairly. Like, it's...
I hate this phrase that people often go around. You're trying to buy the penalty. You're earning the... That's it. He has the right to go down under that sort of challenge. I don't like that phrase, because, you know, it's epitomizing the whole, you know, he can dive because he's an attacker, and so therefore he's kind of allowed to have that ability to be able to do that.
I don't like that situation either, but until referees start giving penalties to players who stay on their feet, we're always going to have that. I think, like, take Messi and Aguero, who I think are two players who more often than not try to stay on their feet as much as they can.
Yep.
But neither of them, when they take that option to stay on their feet and are put off by the defender, fouled by the defender, but still get the shot away, I've never seen a circumstance where the referee has then gone, penalty.
Like, pulled it back.
You've pushed him. Yeah. He's got his shot away, but the quality of the shot is really, really lessened by you pushing him. It's a penalty. Until that happens, you're going to have players going down, and I understand why they do it.
No, absolutely. Spurs, the happier to come away with a draw, would you say? Or
I don't know how you can be 2-0 up and be happy about a draw. Like,
the fact that they were back in it with still 20 minutes to go and still had a number of chances to be able to win it,
yes,
including the offside, the VAR offside goal right in the last minute as well, right? So
certainly at the point that it's 2-2 and there's 20 minutes to go, I'm thinking, all right, mm-hmm, I'll take a draw from here. But you still, I don't think it's a good positive winning mentality to be 2-0 up at any point in a game and not come home, mm-hmm, with a win if you've got aspirations of being like a proper football team. So I don't want to say I'm happy. I wasn't happy. My feeling after that game was like, ugh, we could have won that.
And I was just going to say, this is twice in the last three games that Spurs have been have benefited from a VAR in the last minute. I'm thinking about the Etihad as well. So
we've benefited from a correct decision.
Yeah. You must be loving it.
I love correct decisions. I'm all for correct decisions. However they are administered, I don't care.
All right.
If they are administered by a naked Swahili man dancing upside down on his head. If he gets it right, I don't give a fuck.
You're in for it. All good. All right, let's take a short break. And when we come back, let's dissect very quickly the remaining Premier League fixtures of the weekend.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, monster egg-crushing cock?
Welcome back to part two of Born Offside. We will continue to go through the Premier League matches. Mate, Chelsea 2, Sheffield United 2. Let's have a little one here. Frank Lampard out. Is it time for him to go? Is he going to go?
No, keep him. I like him.
All right, fair enough. Chelsea go 2-0 up, and it's just deficiencies in defence, really, not being able to see out the game. Sheffield United plucky and playing very well, really, at the end of it. Probably fully deserved the draw that they got in the end. But you can't be too worried about Chelsea, really, can you? This was the youngest Chelsea starting 11 in the Premier League era. I know there's a lot of talk, obviously, for Chelsea, having brought all these youngsters through the academy, and Chelsea fans and supporters always wanting to see these youngsters come through because they always seem to go out on loan. You and I have never shown much love for him, and we don't really like him that much.
I fucking hate him.
He's turning out okay, though, isn't he? He's eloquent in his speech. He's quite clear. He's methodical. Probably not the tactical genius that they've had in recent times.
Mate, are you smoking something? Chelsea are shit. I mean, they've been really... they're quite good on the ball, I'll give you. And Mason Mount looks exciting. And
yes.
Tammy, mate, I'm sorry, I'm still not convinced that Tammy Abraham is going to be a top-level striker. I'm not. I think his first touch is not good enough.
Fair enough.
And I think the goals that he scores, like, are mishits or due to his sheer physicality. I just don't think that you're looking at a top-notch quality player. For me, like, I think he's a Premier League player and good on him and playing to a way higher level than I ever could have possibly have hoped to. I just don't think he's going to be great, but he's in a nice bit of form. Good on him. I think Chelsea are half decent on the ball. They do some nice things. I think defensively, they look all over the fucking shop. Really, really susceptible to being broken down. Maybe that will improve when Rudiger comes back, but still... I'd be worried about Chelsea.
With the Tammy thing, I mean, Kane was a slow starter, and this is about the same age. In fact, it's exactly the same age as when Kane started to really pick up for Spurs and start banging them in. You don't think Abraham has got?
I'm not convinced that Harry Kane's going to be a top quality striker. No, I'm joking.
Let Real come in for him next year.
I sincerely hope that Tammy Abraham proves me wrong. I just look at his first touch and I think he's not going to be that player. I'd be delighted for him to prove me wrong.
2-0 up, and then Robinson 1 minute after the break pulls it 2-1 back,
nil,
mate. The set up.
2-0 up. 2-0
up.
2-0 up.
At home.
Horrible shit.
At home.
United defending. Like, the defending for both goals is really bad.
It is pretty shambolic. It's very true. Mate, the celebrations that Sheffield United bring to the Premier League, the crowd, I just love it. Absolutely love that.
I like Sheffield United I like Wilder. It's like your grumpy dad with a bit of Pep Guardiola, because he's clearly tactically quite savvy.
He's
also old school as it gets. You know, he's grumpy all the time. He's not pleased with anything. And I put it to you, mate, there was a point in approximately, like, I would say the 60th minute of that game where Sheffield United have collectively gone to themselves, this lot are not that good.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the best thing about the North London Derby game was watching that, was that the quality of football on offer in that game, while being a long way behind what Manchester City and Liverpool are serving up, it was quite a bit ahead of what Manchester United and Chelsea is. So I feel like third or fourth, we should be okay.
Should be all right. Even though, and now with Eriksen staying
for a year.
For 6 months or a year. That's very good news, really, isn't it? So, it can be a bit worrying. It is early days for Frank. Everybody's saying that they're going to give him a chance. So what, 10th? Possibly, at the end of the season?
Not 10th. I wouldn't go that far. But, I mean, you look at the way Leicester are playing and you've got to be like, ooh. Because Leicester, while they probably don't have as big a squad, are a proper coherent football team, like with a system and players and the likes of Chilwell and Madison and Vardy, who are, and Tillemans looks like a proper player.
Yep, Yeah, he does. You know, he's fantastic. Maybe we'll come on to Leicester in just a second. Just one last thing about Chelsea, though. I mean, they've got a lot of injuries, you know. Hudson-Odoi, Rudiger, Kovacic now, Kante. You know, they've got a lot of very good players. Pedro is still unavailable as well. They've got a lot
of
good players.
I think Rudiger and Kante may well make a difference when they come back. So let's hold off on judgment till then. But still, I don't think... personally, Chelsea are going to do all that much this year.
Fair enough. All right, let's move on to St. Mary's, where Southampton pulled off a 1-1 draw against Manchester United. My goodness, I mean, what a game this was. What an absolutely stunning, quality-packed football match this was. Really, one for the ages, and one which I doubt really? I'll be able to forget for many... No. No, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. It was like pins in my eyes type thing. It was just really painful. Southampton, okay in the first 10 minutes and then didn't do anything. Should have scored in the first 10 minutes, didn't do anything. Daniel James has scored a very nice goal for Manchester
good
United.
Finish.
And a very good finish. And then Man United really had 2, 3, 4 beautiful chances before half time to be able to put this one to bed, but they didn't. Luckily for Southampton, because then Southampton came back in the second half, and finally Vestergaard scoring his first Southampton goal, his first headed goal. It would be a header, wouldn't it? Really, all 2 meters, whatever, of him towering over Lindelof like as if he's some lost school child in the playground, not knowing where on earth to look. And yeah, beautiful. 1-1, that was it. And then Kevin Danso manages to go and get himself sent off ridiculously for a stupid lunge on McTominay. Last 20 minutes of the game on Pops Yoshida, and they hold out for a 1-1 draw. So great result for Southampton, who were actually really quite shy all the way through the match, if you look at it that way. Mate, how long do you give Ole? What do you reckon? Your last prediction was what, Christmas?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they should get rid of him now. If we're being honest, they won't, because their new thing is we'll pick a young and upcoming coach, we'll give him young and upcoming players, and we'll give him time, which is a really good strategy if you pick the right person. If you don't, it's silly. And I watch Manchester United and they're dysfunctional, all over the place, seem to be playing football from 10 years ago. I mean, there's no press. They're a counter-attacking team.
I wouldn't say 10 years ago, because they were actually good 10 years ago. But if this is the new Manchester United way, then long may it continue.
I mean, look at City and Liverpool, who've got it figured out, right? I mean, obviously, in the case of City, they've got a huge amount of money, but Manchester United also have a huge amount of money and prestige and all of those things. But they have a system, which is the system. Like, I mean, there's differences between what Guardiola and Klopp do, but essentially it's, you know, high intensity football. You press, you have a high line, you know when to have your 20 minutes off and you keep the ball. Like, both of those teams can do both things, and they can really stick their foot on the jugular of teams. Liverpool perhaps a little better at that than City are, whereas City keep the ball a bit more and try and wear teams down. But essentially, and then every player they buy is for their system. Like, you look at, and there's very few missteps in what they buy, right? Van Dijk, you know why he had bought him. Alisson, you know why I bought him. You kind of know why Liverpool haven't bought anyone of any note this summer, because they haven't needed him. City have only bought Rodri, and he's a replacement for Fernandes.
Rodri, yeah.
Rodri.
Rodri, and he's good. He's good. I like him.
He is good, and he's a certain, definitely an improvement on Gundogan filling in that position, allowing Gundogan to go play other places. They seem to have a little bit of a blind spot when it comes to fullback, a left fullback, who they seem to refuse to buy anyone to play there. I don't know, but other than that, I mean, and you know, Pep just takes Zinchenko and makes him a world class left back.
But they're waiting for Chilwell, aren't they? For you know, but
yes. But then you look at Manchester United and you've gone,
What have you brought him for? Where's he going to... And he's going to play with... And who's going to play... Well, what about... And your system is... Oh, all right, then.
Well, they certainly did all of that last year, didn't they, with Mourinho bringing the likes of Fred and Lukaku and Sanchez, who are obviously gone now, and a whole heap of just useless players who are all sitting around on the bench. But they brought in Wan-Bissaka, and God, he's good, isn't he? My goodness, I don't think I'd really.
They bought players for a counter-attacking, but counter-attacking is what Benitez and Mourinho were playing in 2004-05. Football has evolved past that now. Mm. You know, like we had counter-attacking with Benitez and Mourinho in the early 2003-04, and then we had Pep and his incessant keep ball, and then Klopp and the Gegenpress came along and Pep had to adjust to the, and they're playing football that it's just dumb. Like,
and you know, with teams now sitting back more and more against the so-called big six, like Tottenham found out against Newcastle, and also against, who do they play in the first game of the season,
Villa,
where they couldn't break down, was it Villa? You know, and well, they did eventually, but it's you need a team who's going to have, you know, creativity and the ability to come forward. Obviously, Maguire is a great addition, and if they do have the ball and they do press, Maguire can bring it out from the back and play, you know, good balls in, much like David Luiz at Chelsea, I guess. But it seems like, I don't know, like they do lack something, like an identity, don't they? And we talk a lot about this nowadays, about teams having an identity and teams having a style of play and a way of playing. Manchester United just don't seem to have that at the moment, do they? So, we'll see. We'll see how long Ole stays in. That is one for the bookies to keep on. Mate, let's move on to Everton versus Wolves, the other big and lovely game of the weekend. Everton, incredibly going, and that was the other one on Sunday as well, wasn't it? So it's a wonderful, wonderful day of football on Sunday. Richarlison putting them ahead after 5 minutes. Wolves pegging them back sort of 3 minutes later. And then 3 minutes after that, Iwobi scoring as well. His first, second for the club, I think, for Everton, pulling them 2-1 up. And I'll tell you what happened for me here on this game, which was quite interesting. I was actually unavailable until the 15th minute. So I switched the box on after 15 minutes and it was 2-1 up. I remember switching the TV on. It was, you know, the TV was black and I was just looking at it and I was switching it on. I was going to the channel and I was just saying in my mind, it's 0-0, it's 0-0, it's definitely 0-0. This game's 0-0. It's got 0-0 written all over it. It's got to be. It was 2-1. And so I started, oh, this is amazing, fantastic. So I started watching it. And then there weren't any goals whatsoever. And then on about 70 minutes, I decided that I'd had enough and I went to bed because it was something like 2 o'clock in the morning here. And then I woke up next morning and I'd missed two goals at the end. So Jimenez pulling it back after 75, only for Richarlison to get the winner after 80. Willy Bolly getting himself sent off 5 minutes into added time as well for a second bookable offence. But mate, what a great football match this was. I watched it the next day and it was just wonderful. It's wonderful stuff. Everton in a good place.
Yeah, I'd say so. A bit iffy away from home, but decent. The thing is, I get the feeling that Silva is a little bit of a streaky manager, as in he'll have, you know, a nice run of 15 games and then a bad run of 15 games. And for him, it's whether or not he can, you know, lengthen his good patches and reduce his bad patches.
Oh, okay. Streaky. I thought nothing to do with his hair. Okay.
No.
Fair enough. Because if you're going to talk streaky, then you could always talk, because this was the battle of the Portuguese managers, Mr. Spirito of the Saint with his streaky beard.
Oh, lovely beard.
Getting in there.
Nuno is rapidly emerging as a very handsome man. I like... From a grooming standpoint, what Nuno is doing, I love it. And I, mate, I for one,
love the NES on his jacket.
Oh, you know, yes.
Because it reminds me of like Nintendo Entertainment System.
And, oh, all right.
And I just, if I was around, like, I would call him Super Nuno, and then he could have SNES, you know?
No.
That would be nice.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, yeah. No, I like that. Oh, mate, you put him alongside Eric Cantona, and there, you know, the beards would... I think the beards would actually have a chat, wouldn't they?
Groomed man. Well, Eric's beard is a pure expression of masculinity. Nuno's is more gentrified hipster trim. You know,
there you go. Yes.
They are both beautiful executions of different genres of facial hair.
Wonderful. They're still going to have a wonderful conversation on a Friday night down the cruiser, aren't they? So yeah, good job. Well done. In the meantime, Wolves, are they going to be okay?
Yeah, they'll be fine. They're not good. I mean, I think they should prioritize the Europas because it's Europe, it's fun, and they'll finish 8th, 9th, something like that.
Fair enough. All right, good stuff. Let's just quickly zip through the rest of them, and then we'll take a quick break. Leicester, 3-1 winners over Bournemouth. Mate, Vardy has a nice goal, really, wasn't it?
It was there? A nice finish, but how high is that line?
It's high. Even the goalkeeper's high. So he's high on something anyway.
it's a high line. And what's the one thing we all know about Jamie Vardy? He's fast.
Loves getting in behind.
He loves getting in behind.
3-1 Leicester in a wonderful place. You mentioned it a little bit earlier. Are they the most likely team to break it into that top six out of all the other teams?
Yes. I think I give them a crack in the top four if they don't get too many injuries.
Wow, good lord. Good stuff.
I don't think they'll do it, but I think they'll be in with a chance up until the final weeks of the season. I really do.
Okay. Certainly, I wouldn't rule them out certainly until February to be up there and close. But yeah, you just got to wonder. They've not got much experience other than winning the title a couple of seasons back, but not got much experience of being up there and maintaining and sustaining that kind of run, do they? So probably not. The other matches saw Crystal Palace beat Aston Villa. Now, of course, this one was the one that was a little bit dubious with Jack Grealish. What annoys me is that I think he's fouled there. I don't think he's. I mean, you talked earlier about you know, Harry Kane getting himself, you know, waiting for the contact, getting himself between ball and man, and being able to get that foul. That's kind of what Jack Grealish did. His momentum was taking him forward. He took it past one. He's knocked it past the next one. He knows there's a foul coming. I don't think he's dived in any particular way, and the referee's brought it back and brought it back for diving. And of course, Villa weren't able to get that final goal. I don't know. I think Aston Villa can really feel hard done by. I wouldn't want to be a Villa fan on the bus back home to Birmingham at the end of that match. That wasn't too nice, really, was it?
Yeah, they absolutely can feel hard done by for that goal. However, having watched the highlights of the game, I thought Palace were the better team.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And are you on the score sheet? Yes, are you is. Do you like what I did there? Yeah,
I did. Nice one.
Yeah. Newcastle 1, Watford 1, West Ham United 2-0 winners over Norwich. And then the two most boring matches of the whole thing, Manchester City 4, Brighton 0. It's almost no point. Oh, we could talk a little bit about how Brighton did. I don't think so.
Mate, we can talk a little bit about Pep coming out afterwards. Because this annoys me when Pep does this. And he was like, I think Brighton are the best team in the world. I think they're fantastic. I think they play wonderful football. They are brilliant. They are wonderful.
Now, isn't it?
Love them. I think they're fantastic. And you're looking going, no, Pep, you really like the fact that they've come at you and tried to play football and you've beaten them at football. Like,
that's spanked them.
What you like, Pep. You know, can he just come out and go, so, yeah, oh, that was great fun today. I have to tell you. Right, I'm on their behalf, it's fairly stupid. It's very brave, but it's fairly stupid. What they've done, right, is they've had a look at it and they've gone, let's try and play football with them, which you have to admire. Fucking dumb as shit, because we're well better at football than anyone. But I really do, I admire it. I'm thankful for it. I'm grateful for it. I really prefer it to when we play one of them teams and they put 11 people behind the ball and they kick my players all over the place. Oh, I hate those days. Those days are the worst.
Well, he tells the world how he hates those days anyway. But this one really was. It was ridiculous.
Does it not get on your nerves, like when he does that?
A little bit. But in fact, it's been on my nerves for since day one. As soon as he got here, you know, it was just like every single match after every single game. It's just an unbelievable experience. It's fantastic. I'm so happy. I'm so, you know.
And then the moment something goes wrong, he's actually a bit of a cunt, Pep, isn't he? Which I'm sure is why he's ultra successful, because all managers must be like that, right? If he just, when something went wrong, if he just shrugged his shoulders, he wouldn't be where he is today. But he's like, he's not any great. I mean, even Klopp has that side, but Klopp is better at it than Pep, where, you know, Klopp will come forth and go, the team played well.
Nice.
Oh, mate, one thing we do have to discuss is Sadio Mane versus Mohamed Salah.
Here we go. The final match that we're talking about. Burnley 0, Liverpool 3. First of all, obviously, Liverpool with another great win against a team that brushed aside Southampton 3-0 a couple of games ago.
That's not a measurement stick for anything.
So you've got to give Liverpool a lot of credit here. That's a 6-goal swing, that is, which means... Next time Liverpool play Southampton, there we go. We know what to expect. Alexander-Arnold with the first goal, although it's been given to Wood. Did you see Klopp's reaction when he was told that it was an own goal by
Very
Wood?
Funny. Not? Very funny. Why does he seem so upset? I don't quite get it. Very funny.
Nah, he's just got radio silence for about 15 seconds, almost as if to question.
It's almost as if in the office sweepstake, Klopp had Alexander-Arnold as the first to score, you know, and then he's found out that, like, he's lost 300 quid, and he's like,
mate, the I think the interviewer must have thought that he was going to get lamped at that moment in time, and you know, not really knowing why. It was crazy. Sadio Mane gets his goal after 37 minutes, and Firmino gets his third, gets the third. But all the talk for this match was about Mo Salah and his inability to be able to find a pass to a teammate who is in a complete open goal scoring position. He did it twice at least, once with Firmino, who just seemed to kind of shrug it off and run backwards and just think, it's all good, and just let it go. But Sadio Mane was in an acres of room. I think the score was 2-0 at this time, wasn't it? Salah had wriggled past a couple of players. He was on the edge of the box. All he has to do is lay it off for Mane, who's completely open on the right-hand side, who's just going to slam it in, you know, no doubt at all. But he doesn't. He takes a flimsy shot with his weaker right foot, just kind of rolls into the goalkeeper's arms. He does apologize to Mane, but for the first time, Mane is substituted by Klopp. Klopp substitutes Mane of all people, not Salah. And his reaction on the bench pretty much said it all, did it not?
Yeah, it did, mate. I put it to you that Salah's apology makes it worse. Because when you do that, you're saying, I have seen you, but I've elected to shoot. What I personally would have done in this last situation is like, didn't even see you. Sorry, mate.
Were you there? Are you there?
Sorry. I'm not greedy. I'm just incompetent.
Totally. I'm so, man.
But when you put your hand up and say, I've seen you, but I've elected to shoot, what you're essentially doing is,
with a big grin on your face. Yeah.
I am a greedy bastard. I am really greedy, and I don't like you particularly. Sorry.
Yeah, totally. We're both going for golden boot this year. There's no way I was going to give you that goal. Had you been someone else, you know, Firmino or maybe Alexander Arnold or even Henderson sort of gallivanting up, I probably would have given it. Because it was you, Mane, I decided not to. Mate, did you see Firmino's reaction in the tunnel?
Oh,
coming back?
Mate. In this argument, in this saga, are you team Salah? Are you team Mane? No, we're all team Bobby. That's yep. where we are. Oh,
Pearly teeth. Bring him on.
Devil may care attitude. Goal here, goal there. Never upsets anybody. Little jokes in the... Oh, mate, I think Bobby Firmino might be one of my favourite non-Tottenham players around. I love him.
I do. I love that reaction. Because
I love the new haircut as well this year.
Hey, it's working, and it's working well with those pearlies as well. So it's a good little contrast. But yeah, that face he pulled in the tunnel kind of just made me. It just reminded me of being a football player. You know, those moments, that camaraderie, that banter.
Dare I say it, being one of the lads.
Being one of the lads, you know, absolutely. It's just great. You know, you come off the football pitch. Okay, fair enough. They've won, so they're able to kind of do that. I doubt. You know, well, he may have
no,
pulled it
I
off.
Think I think if they'd lost 4-0, Bobby Firmino still would have been like a bit of a ruckus here, fellas. Calm down.
Here we go.
Leave it me.
And it's made all the more crazy by the fact that Mane never does lose it, does he? And yeah, he just lost it in the dugout, and when he came off, it almost looked like he was gonna. You know,
I don't really know what kind of personality Sadio Mane is, because you don't see him interviewed all that often, But Salah you do and you kind of think he's weird, but Bobby, mate, I want to go for drinks with Bobby. You'll be like, "Oi, Bob, let's go down a boozer," and Bobby will be like, "All right then, off we go." And like Bobby would come and not touch a bit of booze because he's a model professional, but he'd still be a laugh, right? Yeah, you know, there are some people who come down the boozer for a beer, and if they don't drink, you fuck off. But Bobby could have an orange juice or a lemonade, and I'd still love him being there. You know, I mean, Bobby. You know, and he's a lovely footballer too, isn't he? He's a cultured footballer. Plays some lovely stuff.
Very true.
Like he's like one of those Brazilian players of old. You know, flicks and tricks and smiles and fun, samba. You know, João Bonito.
It's true.
Me gusta.
Like, I wouldn't say he's the best to have, you know, to put on the yellow shirt, but he certainly is sort of, you know, going back
in that mold.
Definitely. And
he's
and
not Ronaldinho. That's what you're trying to tell
exactly.
me. He trains.
Totally. Oh dear, mate, it was fantastic, and mate, this is what the Premier League is all about. For moments like that, it's just so wonderful to watch. Absolutely. All right, mate, we'll take a quick break and let's come up and wrap up the pod with a quick talk about the internationals.
Eric's got a big dick and he uses it to smash eggs. So what? Personally, I'm grateful for a bit of King Lear.
Welcome back to part 3 of Born Offside. Eric Cantona is not here with us today, but he sends on his best. And were he to be here, I'm sure we would have had an hour of complete incoherent babble. We're getting pretty close to that incoherent babble, but but I don't think
only difference is the accent.
That's right. Yeah, and we just couldn't aspire to be as babble-tastic as good old Cantona. We've got the internationals. Let's talk about them very quickly because we have to. I know that we've sort of discussed it. It's quite annoying, really. Premier League picking up a head of steam, and now it's suddenly like, you know, it's like knocking on the doorbell of a party, and they just take ages to open, and then they open the door just a little bit, and they go, "Oh, mate, you're here, good." But then they say, "Hang on just a second," and then they close the door and you're left outside. Yeah. And then it takes quite a while, and then they open the door at 11 o'clock, you know, when you've missed, you know, a good part part of the party. Anyway, it's England versus Bulgaria. It's Portugal versus Serbia. But just very quickly, mate, let's talk about yesterday's match between Germany and the Netherlands. Because, mate, Germany are almost out here. They're almost out. They're not, but wow. Mate. Wasn't this absolutely lovely?
Lovely. Mate, it was a great game.
Ah, it's fantastic. When you look back at the rivalry, this is one heck of a rivalry. If you look back at the rivalries that have gone on, you know, Rudi Völler and Frank Rijkaard, and when you're talking Dennis Bergkamp, and you're talking Lothar Matthäus. I mean, these were absolutely fantastic moments in the past. And this rivalry in the last few years has gone off the boil a little bit because of how badly the Netherlands have been doing. But now the Netherlands, the Laranja, the Mechanica is back, and they're back with a bang. 4-2 winners in Germany. Germany go 1-0 up, only for Netherlands to peg them back. The Netherlands then do go one up, and then there's a penalty for Matthijs de Ligt, who's probably been the most out of form football player of the season so far. He gets very, very harshly judged for a handball in the box. I don't know if you've seen that, but the ball basically falls out of the sky. He's got his back turned to it, and he's sort of rotated around looking for the ball. It falls out of the sky onto his arm, and then they give a penalty for it. 2-2, Germans, you know, looking like they got the wind up their sails, but then the Netherlands, oh. The Netherlands, they go back up there and they score two more for good measure, finishing off 4-2.
The third one was a lovely one too.
Lovely. Wijnaldum's little dink, into the centre was just absolutely beautiful. I mean, he had every right to go for that and to have a crack and to try and score. But no, he just dinked it back in. And was it, I don't know, I can't remember his name, but it was his debut. Mm. He was coming on for his debut for Holland, and he scored 3-2. Beautiful goal. And no more than they deserved, because they dominated that second half. And it could have
I thought
been
much, both much teams looked good going forward. I think the Germans also had some interesting moments, and like I'm loath to say it, mate, but they do play nice football. The Germans, you know, like they play sweeping, attacking stuff. You've got Gnabry, who I've liked a lot more since he left Arsenal. Don't know how that.
Yes.
Royce, and you know, like it's they're fun to watch. The Germans, like they're not
very
like
true.
The old
very
German.
True.
Old German teams, you know, that
it was only about, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago that they won the World Cup, obviously over in Brazil, and that was a horrible team. I hated them. I'm still not a big fan of Germany.
Mate, they're horrible as individuals. Manuel Neuer has a face that you perpetually want to whack with an oak log, but
that's true.
But the football, if you just like,
yes,
you know, it is, you know, exciting
to
football
side.
To what? Yes, yes. Yeah. The art is good. The people creating it are wankers.
Yeah.
Sure.
And of course, my old mate Frankie de Jong, lovely stuff, getting on the score sheet. No more than he deserved. He's had a pretty good start to his Barcelona career, although Barcelona have not had a good start to their season so far. But yeah, wonderful result there for the Netherlands, and that leads us on quite nicely for tonight's match between England and Bulgaria. Bulgaria have lost, I believe, 7 of their last 7. So England's favourites for this at Wembley today. What do you think?
You would have thought so. Yes.
Trust England, though. I would not be surprised something crazy happens and they lose this 1-0 to a dodgy goal in the 6th minute, and then Bulgaria just camp out and win it. We're looking at Pickford in goal. Alexander Arnold. Right back, Chilwell left back, Gomez and Maguire in the middle. In the middle of the park is where they seem to have some issues. Rice, Maddison, and Henderson is out now. Is that right? I think Henderson's pulled out with injury.
I'm not sure, to be honest with you, mate.
I thought he had, but maybe not. And then Sancho, Kane, and Sterling. I think Sancho, Kane, and Sterling. It's not going to be Rashford, is it? Up front for either one of those three?
I would have thought it would be Sterling and Sancho either side of Kane. I would have thought so.
Yeah. That was what... but, you know, with the wonderful win in Spain that they had, that was with Rashford. That was with Rashford. Did you say Sancho, Sterling, Kane?
Or yes, Rashford, that's what I said. Sterling? No, I said Sancho and Sterling either side of Kane is what I
either
said.
Either side of Kane. Beautiful. No Mason Mount. A lot of talk about him because he's a number 10, and Gareth Southgate has come out and said that they don't play with a number 10. So not looking great for Mason Mount, although Brendan has decided to start putting him out on the wing a little bit. You almost wonder whether or not he's doing that so that he can try to increase his opportunities of playing in that England side. But then, of course, he's going to have to compete against Sancho and Sterling, and I don't think there's any way. I think Sancho and Sterling are the future for England for the next 10 years. I can't see any other way for it to be any other front line, really. And of course, Kane, I hope Kane does well, obviously for England. I hope he does well because then hopefully he can bring that form in for Tottenham as well. And also because we don't really have any other recognised centre-forwards, do we? I mean, Rashford can play there, but then the next one down is Wilson, really, isn't he? I mean, with Vardy out, there's just nobody else there.
Well, unless Rashford plays through the middle.
I guess so. But it's just, do you think that's a bad thing for Kane, that he quite possibly doesn't feel as though he's being pushed by anyone for his place?
No, I don't think Harry Kane is that intelligent.
I think
all Harry Kane thinks about is playing football and whether or not he's scoring. I think self-motivation should be all right. You should be all right.
All right. Fair enough. So a big win. They've scored 5 in their first 2 matches each. So that's 10 goals. They're top of the group, England. Yeah, I mean, everything's pointing at another five against Bulgaria as well, really, isn't it? So, mate, let's wrap up today's pod with a shout for Twat of the Week. Phil Neville. Before we do that, we've got Owen versus Shearer to talk about, don't we?
Oh, mate, so your nominations for Twat of the Week are Owen, Shearer and Neville.
Who? No, just Owen and Neville.
All right. Okay. Was there not a game? I'm thinking Euro 2000.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's when we exited the competition to Romania, where, if I'm not wrong, Shearer scores a penalty, Owen scores a second goal, Phil Neville gives away the penalty that knocks us out. I think that in a roundabout way, that answers your question as to which one of them is Twat of the Week.
Beautiful. Oh, I love that. I've seen that one. It could very well have been. It could very well have been. So Shearer and Owen put themselves up there because they've been able to score goals against Romania. Well done. And then Phil Neville, what are you doing, you silly man. For anyone who's not kept up with this charade between the two, Michael Owen, who's not a very smart man in himself either, has come out with a biography. Is it his second biography? No, it's his first biography, I think.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was his second.
And he's come out and he said that basically he going to Newcastle from Real Madrid was a step down, which, you know, arguably it's a step down to any club when you leave Real Madrid. But I think had he gone back to Liverpool, which was one of the ideas, he wouldn't have been seeing that as so much of a step down. But he's basically come out and said that it was the worst move that he could possibly have made. And that was at the time that Alan Shearer was managing the team. So Alan Shearer, understandably, came out and was not very happy at the comments laid out by Owen, to which Owen then replied, and this is all on Twitter live, by the way, so everyone can go in there and have a gander at the spat. Owen then came back and said, I seem to recall you, Mr. Shearer, wanting to leave
Newcastle and go to Liverpool, which by all accounts never happened.
No, like, that's right. And there's no evidence.
Anyone else has come forward and go, wow, Owen's revealed this story at last. Or we all knew this, but no one said it. Like, literally, there's just been, no, that didn't happen.
Yep. Absolutely. Thing. So, it's all speculation. I don't know what Owen's on about. And he's not painted himself in much glory here, has he? And he's taken on.
It's weird, mate, that a player that good, 40 goals for England? Probably, I don't know, 150-ish Premier League goals, I would have thought, in his time. Not particularly loved by anyone.
No.
I mean,
he's
Liverpool
not,
have got to be the closest, right?
England, he's loved by England.
Yeah, but like, if you're an England fan and only an England fan, are you really a fan?
Yeah, good point. No, you're not.
No, you're not. You're not. You're not really, unless you're one of those who goes around the world following them.
But otherwise, if you're not a Liverpool supporter, you're not a Newcastle supporter, you're not a Man United supporter, then you would be supporting Michael Owen because he's doing it for England. You know, so there's that to it. But you're right, and he had. It's strange, so strange to say, because he's you know, that night at Saint Etienne, obviously, when at 18 years old, taking on the whole Argentinian defence and scoring that absolute wonder goal. And you
a
know,
wonderful, it, wonderful moment. Mate, you can put that goal on the TV now and the hairs on the back of my neck will stand up.
Absolutely.
Like, when he did that to that Argentina team with fucking Gabriel fucking Batistuta and his fucking shit
on. Pochettino wasn't he?
Not that one, I don't think. He certainly was 4 years later. Simeone, yep. Ariel Ortega, Vivas. Roa, mate, my blood's boiling. Move on. All of their faces.
What a spat. And for it to be out in the public eye on Twitter, it was just fun.
Zanetti.
All of us. Oh, Zanetti. Javier. Oh, my goodness. Inter Milan legend that he was. What an incredible team that was. But, yeah, you're right. Handbags. Mate, let's wrap up very quickly with Phil Neville, who has this week come out and stated – and I'm quoting this verbatim. He has said, "I have a vision that nobody else has. I've got bravery that or no wants. Other coach has probably ever had
or wanted."
And you know what? You can thank your lucky stars that I'm here. I'm here to stay, and I'm going to continue to keep improving. Phil Neville. Oh my goodness! Now we've stated already on this show our dislike for this man. At least I have quite openly. I think he's a complete twat. And really, with quotes like this, with quotes like the one he came out with after the Cameroon quarterfinal in the Women's World Cup, it's only a matter of time before he says something even stupider. And it's just going to start getting the eyes rolling from everybody, really, isn't it? I think he's. The thing is, he's not going to be fired now because he's the coach of the British team for the Olympics. He'll be the coach for England women's European Championships in 2021, I believe. You may have to go back on that to see the dates and everything, but his position is going to be pretty solidified at least until then, and unless he keeps talking, and in which case he may talk himself out of a job with some of this stuff, isn't it? But basically, he's putting himself on a pedestal here. I have a vision that nobody else has, and I've got bravery that no other coach has probably ever had. All right.
Wow.
Two words for you, mate. Pep Guardiola. All right.
Blanket statement.
Jesus Christ. Mate, complete knob?
Yes. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Utter knobbery.
Should we end it there, mate?
We should end it with a bit of knobbery. That's what
all right. Beautiful. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. And thanks once again, Dave, for wonderful insights into Eric Cantona's King Lear escapade.
It was a good episode because we started with a cock and we ended with a knob.
Yeah, we did. And whatever happened in between was just, there was just a lot of swinging in between, I think, in the middle. Yeah. It was very good. Well, we'll leave it at that, starting with cocks and ending with knobs. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And we shall come back after the international break and preview next week's Premier League matches.
All right, then. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.